and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. My name is James Gilmore. It's episode number 273, and we're doing another one of these things on Twitch again, as has kind of become a habit at this point. Joining me today is Peter Willington.
Hello.
And Harry Slater.
Hiya.
Returning to the fold, we are back as the threesome once again. Peter, you've been eating buns and playing games.
I've been eating buns, Belgian buns specifically.
The best kind.
I've also been playing video games.
Good.
Not Belgian games specifically.
No, okay.
I wouldn't be averse to Belgian games.
Of course not. You're an international kind of fella.
Exactly. I wouldn't want to cause any sort of international incident there with the Belgian game makers.
That is good to know. Harry, you been playing domestic games and eating foreign buns, or the other way around?
I've had no buns for such a long time, I've forgotten what bun feels like in my mouth.
Oh no, that sounds like a terrible life that's frankly not worth living.
Yeah, well thanks. I came here for a bit of a pep up and all I get is to spend it, thanks.
Well, guys, we're just taking you to the natural end of this bun argument.
Yeah, excellent.
I like the cinnamon swirls. You know the ones?
Oh yeah.
They are the best.
Are they buns technically though? They're pastries, aren't they?
Shut up.
Of course they are.
They're like pastry bun cake. It doesn't matter.
No, we're going to get into the is Jaffa cake a cake debate, and that's just a bottomless pit from which no one can escape. Which is fine as long as that pit's full of Jaffa cakes, because they're great. All right then, so we're doing a podcast. We'll talk about games at some point. How about we make that point now? First on this week's updates, Angry Birds Go. It's only gone and been updated again. Peter, you're the big fan of Angry Birds Go around these parts, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So have you played it for a while? Have you got tired of their two tracks or however many tracks they have?
No, I have had a quick go on the frozen tracks because there was a preview mode that was kind of launched a month or so ago now. And they do offer a very different kind of racing experience. I mean, still, you are going down hills on a go-kart. But yep. They do feel slightly more slippery and slidey, much like the speed tracks, I believe they were called, which was World 4 of the Angry Birds Go levels.
Right.
Those kind of feel really, really fast, and these ones feel like you've got to kind of toboggan down the hills. It feels really different. It feels really good.
Yeah, you can see them like going on in the video to the right of the screen there. This new update has introduced a few things. So it's called the Sub-Zero Pack. It gives you daily events, weekly competitive tournaments, and apparently you also get some snowmobile-type transport things for people to drive around in. Did you have a go on any of those?
I think I had a quick go on. I think you get them automatically because you have to change to different carts and so on. You get different... So each world has different cart types, and so, yeah, you kind of get given one automatically.
Gotcha. Well, that's a thing that you can download right now for free. It's available actually on all platforms, including Windows Phone has even gotten a hold of this thing. I know, right? What? That is how widespread this avian situation is. All right, then. So you can grab that if you're still a fan. Next up, Theatrhythm Final Fantasy Curtain Call DLC, which we spoke about a couple of weeks back. And it's, I think, almost finally out now, maybe? Hasn't got the release date, but they've added some new information about it. Mm-hmm. So what have you got? So apparently Curtain Call gives you 200 songs in the tiny cartridge. Just announced Rosa from Final Fantasy IV is turning up. Yuffie from Final Fantasy VII is turning up.
There's some weird songs in that list.
I know, right? So we all know that well-loved hit Library of the Ancients from Final Fantasy V.
Mm-hmm. And of course, who could forget Crazy Chocobo from Final Fantasy 13-2?
That is rarely off my iPod, if I am honest. Tough Battle Number 2 from Final Fantasy 11. Not as good as Tough Battle Number 1, I think.
Oh, well, you know, you've got to keep it to the classics.
Yeah. Mm. I preferred their earlier stuff.
I know. Lost their way a little bit. Difficult second album, you know. So, yes, there's a whole bunch more stuff coming with this DLC. We will give you a release date as soon as it appears, but they're being really coy about it and just keep teasing more information but not giving us the concrete releases. However, something which does have an actual concrete release date is Icebreaker: A Viking Voyage. It's now appeared on Android for the first time. It was out on iOS has been out for a while now. I'd say about 5 or 6 months, in in fact. And it's actually really good. We reviewed it both on Pocket Gamer and AppSpy, and I really liked it. This was one of Rovio's projects, the publishing thing that it's doing at the moment, where it's helping out other developers and giving them a bit of a push, and this was one of the games to come from that. I liked this one. It was quite fun and physics-y, and the character art was quite charming, and it was kind of enjoyable. Did you play it, Harry?
I did play it a bit, yeah, and I tried to play these new levels a while back. They sent us an APK for the Android version, and then it didn't work. And then they said, oh, yeah, we sent you one that doesn't work. And then I finished work. Because it's not Rovio Stars anymore. They've taken it back. Nitrome, the guys who made it, who had a chat with when we were in London for our swanky PG Connects with people show thing.
That is what it's called.
They're really nice, really, really good, really passionate, really interesting guys, and they basically got it back from Rovio, I believe, and now it's under their banner rather than the Rovio Stars thing.
I see. Well, if you were a fan of the game on iOS or Android, any of the platforms it's currently on, there's a brand new chapter that's just been added to it, which is set inside the belly of a sea monster. Apparently, it adds 40 extra levels plus a massive boss fight, which I think you got a glimpse of in the video that was playing to the side there. So if you are inclined and you're still interested in your Viking voyages, then now's the time. Get involved. And if you're an Android person, go grab it like right now, because it's brand new. Why not? Be love. News. So if you've been anywhere near the Twitters today or yesterday, then you probably haven't escaped all this Tomodachi Life drama. Now, I've been following it from the periphery, sort of at the sides, but I haven't read a great deal about it. I know what I've learned through social media, which is about the least reliable way to learn about anything. I would suggest, especially delicate subjects to do with complicated issues.
Are you somehow saying that it's impossible to summarise the difficulties in gender and sexuality inclusion in 140 characters?
Yes. Lol. Hashtag yes. I'm not good at Twitter.
You don't know how Twitter works, do you?
No, I don't know Twitter. Sorry, you can't tell. So, just to give you a brief rundown about it, what I'll do is I'll outline it, and you two have actually written a lot more about this than I have, as I've written nothing about it. What basically happened initially was, and correct me if I'm wrong here, they released versions or builds of Tomodachi Life, which is kind of a bizarre little adventure game in which you use your Miis to populate the world, kind of like a Sims-ish thing, but a bit more zany and a bit mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you control them, and you can like get them to put your friends in there, and they form bands and do raps and relationships and bake cookies and whatever else. It's one of those fun little simmy games. And in the original release or original build of it, there was a situation where you could have same-sex couples. You could have them, like, people of the same sex getting together, right? Couldn't you?
Well, yeah, what? You mean reality?
Yeah. They had a version where you can, like, guys and girls or girls and girls or guys and
guys. I think it was a glitch in an early Japanese version, wasn't it? That you could have same-sex.
Yes, so it could be done, but it wasn't actually intended. As you say, it was a glitch, and it's something that Nintendo have subsequently addressed. Because people went, oh, you can have same-sex marriage. And they went, actually, oh, no, wait a minute. This wasn't actually planned. This was a glitch. And people went, okay, fine. And they fixed the glitch and have thereby fixed gay marriage by removing the glitch. They've also removed any option of gay coupling as well.
Yes.
All right. I just want to make sure I've got this all straight. So obviously what then happened was a bunch of people went, hang on a minute, why did you remove it? Like, because it was working. I mean, you can fix the glitch issue, but why take that element out of the game, especially if it was, let's say, representative of a big chunk of society, perhaps? That seems a little bit strange. And Nintendo spoke up, and they released a statement in which they said, Nintendo never intended to make any form of social commentary with the launch of Tomodachi Life. The relationship options in the game represent a playful alternate world rather than a real-life situation. We hope that all of our fans would see that Tomodachi Life was intended to be whimsical and quirky, and we were absolutely not trying to provide social commentary. So, social commentary appears to be the thing they're coming back to. Yeah.
The noise, that's just such utter nonsense. It's not, it's this game that is set and is all about social interaction, but we're not trying to make any comment on society. Nonsense. Any product you release in that form that is about creating relationships and bonds with people, if you release it and sort of say, oh, actually, that whole homosexuality thing was a glitch, then it's sort of like, wait, that's a massive comment on a view of the world. For me, it's just incredibly sort of dangerous in a way that they're almost missing the entire point with that statement about the game that they've made, and it's quite scary. And I just think it's wrong that it's wrong. Full stop. It should have gay marriages in it.
Mm. It was a bit of a surprise that the wording they use, addressing this whole social commentary thing, as if like that's what it is, as if if they were to put same-sex relationships in, they're suggesting that would be making some kind of social commentary. That's the argument. So by removing it, they have removed any kind of social commentary, the thing they keep referring to. When actually it's just a relationship option, like in the same way as they have any other things in the game which reflect life, presumably. Yeah. So it's a little funny little life sim. So you've got guys and you've got girls. So you're reflecting those elements of life, presumably. And you've got people of different races, haven't you, in the game? Is that right? You can build your me, and your me can be like different shades of skin. So you can be dark, light, whatever color you happen to be under the sun. That's reflecting real life, as in real life people are all different colors from all around the world. That's a wonderful thing. When it comes to the idea of sexuality or putting a relationship into a game, then that becomes social commentary rather than just reflecting an element of reality.
Mm.
That's where they're firmly and clearly drawing the line, which does seem to be a little bit weird. The thing it looks like is a kind of cowardice on Nintendo's part.
Yes, it is.
Not to put too fine a point on it.
It's absolutely that. And not only that, like, it's not even necessarily that it's them not trying to make a statement about society. Like, whatever you think about the issue of like gay marriage or gay relationships or whatever it is, Nintendo decides, and the development group is Nintendo SPD1, I believe it's called. They're the developer, which is an internal group at Nintendo, worked on loads of different games, including WarioWare games and all sorts of stuff. If a company makes a game in which one of the game mechanics is relationships, then surely you would want relationships to be shown in a realistic or at least whole manner. Like, it just strikes me as really lazy game design. It just strikes me that, like, they've gone, hey, we're going to do this whole thing about relationships. Oh, that's cool. Are you going to represent? No, we're just going to forget it. No, like, because it's much easier for us to not do that. Like,
well, I wouldn't have suggested it's a development thing. I think it would probably be fairly easy for them to just allow the guys to hook up as well as the girls. I don't think there would be a huge rebuild of the game required for that, especially if glitch allowed it to do it.
Absolutely.
I think it's more like they didn't want to go near that area. Yeah, they decided to make the sexuality category very narrow.
Absolutely. I'm just saying, like, whatever you think about it, at the end of the day, it makes for a worse game. Like, whatever you think about that
issue. More limited, certainly.
Exactly. It makes for a more limited game because it doesn't actually explore the breadth of relationship variety that there is in the world. But I tell you what you can do.
What's that?
You can star in a massive, like, 5-person band singing in front of hundreds of people singing songs that you've written yourself. You can go for a walk on a beach and, like, chat up a lady who looks like Princess Peach, only to be interrupted by your carefully constructed Shigeru Miyamoto character. You can do, you know, you can do all of these things. Currently, I'm actually playing Tomodachi Life at the moment. We can't review it because there's a really long embargo on it, essentially.
Right.
But that's just really good because it means that we can play it for a huge length of time. Mm. And at the moment, James, Harry, I've made you two in the game, and I've put you into it. I've also made Keith Andrew.
You've stolen my likeness.
I've put all of us into it, and we're having fantastic japes and jollities and all this sort of thing. And it's really good fun.
But we can't get it on.
But none of us can get it on, and that was the whole reason I decided to review it.
This is rubbish.
So
I want to get up to sexy times in your virtual little world. I like the fact, just as I said that on the stream, it went woolly woolly woolly, and we went after a dream sequence in the video, as if we were about to relay that special scenario that I've had in my head for so long now. Damn you, Nintendo, for not letting me fulfill my sexy dreams. To readdress the issue in the way that they have and make out like, oh no, we didn't mean to do it, and if we were to do so, suggesting that like, oh, this would be some kind of drastic social commentary. It's like, no. Clearly what you don't want to do is you don't want to put it in there because you think it might upset some people, possible conservative people, perhaps.
I think the thing is
that, I mean, because they're your me's, aren't they? They're not characters within a game particularly, they are your digital representations.
Yes, of yourself.
So it's like, if you're gay, then your digital representation of yourself is probably going to be gay as well.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, you're saying that you can have this little world to play in that we have built for you, but there is a specific part that, because you are a specific sexuality or whatever, that you're not allowed to play with. And it's that makes it an issue more than having it there. Just saying anyone can get married. We'll let you marry. You know, it's just so,
like,
backwards thinking, almost beggars belief.
Can we transpose this onto another issue that, thankfully, most people have put to bed, right? Let's, like, another big social issue, one of the things that defines us as a people, as individual, like, as a species, is race. Like, imagine if in the game they'd gone, you can be white, but nothing else. Like, imagine the fury that would have caused.
Yeah, and
like, or if it had been, you know, you can be white and you can marry white people,
yeah,
but you can't marry black people, then yeah, absolutely.
Like, it seems that it's one that they haven't quite caught up with yet. Like, with, and I think it's been an issue with Japanese games before, because, I mean, Japan as a culture, and in certain other cultures where they're islands in which haven't had a huge amount of, like, integration or a huge amount of immigration from other people, you tend to find that they treat that kind of issue slightly differently than everybody else does. If you have a long history of integration and immigration, people flooding into your country, then you're more used to it, you're more accustomed, and you tend to have more progressive thinking. And other countries tend to, like, if you've been isolated and if the ethnic populations are very kind of, again, narrow, then you tend to find that the art and the culture and everything else reflects that. When it comes to sexuality, there's not much of an excuse for that, I don't think, because I don't think there's a predominance of one type of sexuality in one type of culture. I think that's pretty even-handed all over the world. So you can say, like, well, you know, we don't see many light-skinned or dark-skinned people around these parts, so it isn't reflective. But to say, like, there are no gays here, no gays on this island, it's like, no, come on, no, don't be silly. You're effectively just not allowing people to represent themselves. Nicely, I've seen a lot of people, as of course we heard on social networks, have jumped up, and everyone's been kind of, this is a bit silly, isn't it? And Nintendo should probably reverse this, and it's a shame. I haven't seen much hate in the other camp. I haven't seen that many people.
Because Pocket Gamer and AppSpy are places of lore.
Yes, but the internet isn't necessarily. But all the people I've followed have kind of had the same view and the same reaction as we've had, which is, come on, silly Nintendo, silly. Don't do that. When does the actual game come out? You say it's got a very long embargo. When do we actually get to play this?
I want to say June sometime.
Yeah?
Something like that.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. All right then. Well, we'll see what they do in the meantime. I don't think Nintendo are going to reverse this one.
No, but I don't think they've got time.
No, but silly Nintendo. Moving on to the next thing. You've been playing a game that also is only, it's out in kind of soft launch at the moment, I think. Retry. We were talking about Rovio earlier and their little sub-production company, which originally published the Icebreak game, but you're saying now isn't doing it now. In addition to all their work on things like Angry Birds and that whole franchise, they've set up another little production wing, haven't they? Which they're calling Level 11. And they want to use it to make specifically non-Angry Bird themes products. That's right, isn't it? Yeah. So, one of the first ones to emerge from that stable is a game called Retry, which you can see playing in the corner of the screen there. And it's safe to say, looks an awful lot like Flappy Bird.
Yes, it looks a lot like Flappy Bird in so much that it's a one-touch flight game. But that's about where the... And it's very, very hard. But that's, I suppose, really where the sort of similarities sort of finish. It's much more complicated than Flappy Bird. And believe it or not, it's harder. Far harder.
Harder actually. Than Flappy Bird, my word.
Way harder than Flappy Bird.
Yeah, well, you've been playing it for a bit, and in fact, this video playing to the side is you playing it. I've seen a lot of people referencing this game as well when it's been published, and everyone is saying, oh, look, it's a Flappy Bird clone. Now, you spoke to Rovio directly, didn't you, Peter?
Yes, I talked to Jamie Laius, I believe his name is pronounced. I called him Jamie when I first met him. That was
nice.
That didn't go down.
Good solid name, James.
Yeah, so all right, Jamie. It's Jamie. Okay. He was a very nice chap, and he told me all about the game and what level 11 was getting up to. And he was very concerned, actually, to sort of, because I did say to him, well, it looks a little bit like Flappy Bird. And he was like, this has been in development for months and months and months and months. We didn't even know about Flappy Bird before it came out. It's got a lot more finesse to it, and I completely agree with him. As we were saying, like, I've gone hands-on with it for App Spy, and there's a lot more choice in terms of your control as to how you actually want to move the plane. You know, when you tap on the screen, you accelerate and ascend into the sky, and when you let go, you fall. But you can accelerate and ascend so quickly that you end up doing backflips and so forth.
Right.
And you'll have to. The whole idea is you want to go from left to right, and as this video shows, like, that's kind of what you're doing to begin with. But a world or so in, you start to have to fly backwards a lot. And imagine having to do that is so hard in a game where basically all you can do is say, I want to go right and up. Like, they will ask you to go down and left. Like, so there's a lot more difficulty there. It's free to play. It's very, very, very tough.
What's the free-to-play aspect? I mean,
so the only free-to-play aspect that it has at the moment, you can't upgrade your planes, you can't, I don't know, unlock levels. Well, you can unlock loads and loads of levels all at once, but who does that? The only thing that you can do is you can pay for more coins, and these coins you pay on airfields, which act as, like, checkpoints.
Right. Okay, so you can advance a little bit further.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and some of these levels will leave you howling in frustration. They are so, so difficult. So you can pay to kind of get halfway through, maybe, and then land, and then be like, oh, thank God. And then hopefully, you know, start again, and you'll be halfway there. So, it's very different to what they've been doing, and that's why they've got Rovio level 11. Like, they're trying to make games that are going to be a bit different. So
do we believe them, Harry? Do we reckon that this is actually... This has been developed for months and months and months, but we should also point out that Flappy Bird was released in March of last year, so it was also out for a year and a bit before it even rose to prominence. So technically, this was made after Flappy Bird. Technically. Is this a completely new thing, or have they gone, hello, that was popular, let's rush the production of this game and get it out there now?
I don't think anything's a new thing, particularly. I mean, Angry Birds was that game about castles or something, but all games are inspired by other things. I don't think it's particularly, you know, I'm not going to jump on Rovio's back for deciding to make a Flappy Bird clone if they're supremely popular. That's kind of what successful publishers do, isn't it? That's how true. They release their, especially in the mobile sector, it's a bit icky, but they made Angry Birds Go, and that's terrible. So,
stop shaking your head, Pete.
I don't know. I'm not a particular fan of Rovio's work, but I like some of the stuff they did. I think Angry Birds and Angry Birds Space were really, 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 really good mobile games. And I think recently they've sort of lost their way with stuff that is just not as focused on pure gameplay as they were before, and I think that has been sort of to their detriment. So if they have this smaller sort of studio that's working on smaller, more focused games that aren't going to have to worry about thing and plush toys and God knows what else, then I think that could be a good thing. So
I think you might be right there. Like, they have an issue, or have done recently, in trying to manage the move from premium to free-to-play. Angry Birds Go, there was a prime example of that, trying to work out how to sort of transition to leverage their Angry Birds franchise into a big old free-to-play cash cow, whereas previously it's always been kept a premium title. When they released it on Android, they made the Angry Birds games free. But they often do that on Android because the reason that is always given is piracy. That's why they always say they do it. But they haven't been able to kind of hit upon their own free-to-play super franchise, like a Clash of Clans or a Simpsons Tapped Out or something like that. And Rovio are obviously up for one of them. But no, I would agree that they haven't quite found out how to tap into that market.
So one thing I should sort of clarify is that Rovio Level 11 isn't a specific studio. It's definitely a publishing arm. Okay. So all of these games that will come out, and believe me when I say that there are more games on the way, I am...
Ooh. Okay.
Bound to secrecy as to what they are, which is horrible because I want to talk all about one of them.
Right.
But, like, they are prototypes that are made internally as part of... You know how you get, like, game jams at big publishers sort of thing. They've so far the content that they've kind of got scheduled is stuff that's come out of stuff like that.
Okay.
And so it isn't just a specific studio there that's making very specific kinds of like more hardcore games or you know whatever kinds of games. It's just, hey, we've been experimenting, we've been trying out different things, and this is what we've come up with. Is there something cool in it? And if there is, you know, then they go on and they think, should we publish this?
Right, I see. Well, the game itself is currently available in Canada, Finland, and Poland. So those are the soft launch territories. You can get it right now for free. It won't come over like global app stores for a little while yet. So they usually soft launch it for a few weeks, and then once they find out the kinks and got some feedback, they'll set it global. So if you're in those territories, you can grab it now, give it a try if you're an Angry Birds fan, or if you're indeed you're a Flappy Birds fan, or any kind of birds fan, apparently, then you can have a bash at it. If not, then just go like that. You see that? just bat it away.
It doesn't bother you. If you don't like it, don't worry about it. Don't get
it up. That's fine. But if you don't like this kind of lo-fi single tap retro type game, perhaps you like a nice, healthily budgeted 3D rendered story game like Telltale's Tales from the Borderlands.
That was seamless.
I know, right? How slick was that transition? Pro. Less slick now, I've pointed it out, but oh well. So this is the game that I was slightly confused by. Of all the Telltale games that have been announced recently, the Game of Thrones game and When the Wolf Among Us appeared and everything, I was like, yep. And then they said, and Tales from Borderlands. And I was like, okay. That could work, I guess. They announced it way back in December. And this is in collaboration with Gearbox, obviously. This is they're bringing their Borderlands franchise to touchscreens and probably consoles and everything as well in a standard, like, point-and-click adventure narrative thing. Possibly with not much violence and definitely with a lot less loot and grinding, I would imagine. What they have recently done is announced some of the characters and junk. So, you're exploring Pandora, the planet upon which the whole Borderlands franchise is set. You take control of two different characters, or you're exploring them at least. Rhys, who apparently is an ambitious man who works for Hyperion. And Fiona, who's a fast-talking con artist, right? So if you go over to Pocket Gamer, you'll be able to see the screenshots live. I'm sure Danny will throw it into the mix. So the information we didn't know before, there's going to be a dual narrative. These two characters, I think you're going to take control of both of them and be flitting between two of them at the same time. Which, I'm not sure. I'm thinking of the other. Has that happened in a Telltale game before? Because I know we've
flitting
jumped
between two characters.
Well, like, for example, The Walking Dead focused on Lee. And then in the next series, it focused on Clementine. So we switched protagonists midway through a franchise, but actually playing two simultaneously?
Yeah. Wallace and Gromit.
Did you control Gromit as well?
Yeah. They did it in Sam and Max.
Oh, I suppose so, yeah.
And I want to say they did it in Jurassic Park, but no one played Jurassic Park.
Oh, I played that. That was rough. That was the series low. Everyone was like, Jurassic Park, hey, oh god, this is awful. Mm. And immediately put it down. They've certainly got the look right. Mm. Like, I mean, already with the Telltale art style that was used in The Walking Dead and in Wolf Among Us, it was already a sort of 3D comic book style art, a bit cel-shaded, a bit heavy, thick edges around each character, which is pretty much the Borderlands art style already. So in that sense, match made in heaven. What they have to do now is tweak the gameplay, so apparently, while it's not the primary focus of the tale, there will be loot that you can collect, and that it will be able to be used in other areas of the Borderlands franchise. So I think they're trying to do a tie-in where you can collect, I don't know, gold or scrap or whatever, and then you'll be able to port that into your Borderlands 3 or whatever, maybe?
That sounds seamless.
Well, the one I always remember is the Mass Effect game, Mass Effect Infiltrator.
I've yet to play that. Yeah,
it's not great.
But
I really like Mass Effect even games, so. With my love of Mass Effect, I was still like, yeah, this isn't great. And you could unlock. It was the only way to get on Mass Effect 3 that like full, not awareness rating. There was a rating for
alertness.
Yeah, galactic alertness or something. Yeah,
like that, yeah.
Is everyone paying attention?
Yeah, and you need to be 100% aware, and the only way to get 100% was also to play this game. So it was kind of a slightly cynical tie-in element where you've got to get this crap game as well if you want to complete the fucking... But I can't imagine they'd hold huge chunks back. It's got to be extra stuff.
No, it'd be more like Fable pub games, where you can just get gold by playing awful games.
Sometimes the minigames can be fun. I'll tell you what I liked doing. Red Dead Redemption. I quite liked doing the saloon-type gambling in that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was just really simple. Like, but you could go in there and play blackjack and poker and stuff. But and I don't really play those kind of games anyway. But I liked doing it in the saloon setting. It suited the game for me, like that you could sit down and do that, and it was a good setting from it.
And it can be quite awkward. There was a Game Boy game, and I always distinctly remember playing it. There was a James Bond Game Boy game where one of the levels you had to beat one of the other characters at poker, and you had to amass something like $15,000 so that somebody would come up to you with a ticket and say, "You've got to go and see Mr. Big." But of course, it was just a game of poker. I was sat there for like 2 hours, like with my Game Boy, just like just playing this single game of poker in this game, and I just thought, like, what are you doing? Like, I didn't feel like a spy. I felt like an addicted gambler. It was awful. And there was no save game either. So I died, and I was like,
How did you die?
I completed it. I went to go and see Mr. Big or whoever it was, and then his goons killed me, and then I had to start again.
Someone threw a card really, really hard at your neck. And you got a crushed larynx, and that's how you died. Well, we don't know the release date still. The only information they've given us is that it's going to cost $4.99 or £2.99 for each episode, which is the same price as all their other games. And again, season pass, maybe £10 or $15 is usually the rate going for that. I imagine it'll be before the end of the year. Like the Game of Thrones game. I can only imagine they're doing them simultaneously and they're going to come out not too far apart from one another, I reckon. So stay tuned. Okay, out and about this week, we're going to start off with Castle Storm Free to Siege, which is a mobile version of a game that's already existed on PC and went to Vita at one point as well, I think. Mm-hmm. It's a 2.5D tower defense game set in ye olden medieval times, in which you have to build up a great big castle, like you can see going on in the video right now, and then defend it against attacking onslaughty people. And also, you have to go and lay into their castle as well by lobbing great big projectiles, firing massive big arrow, catapult, cannony things, and also sending troops out to fight in melee combat. Who's played this one? That will be the tumbleweed blame. Just me, then. Well, I played it on the stream that we did yesterday on Eye on the App Store, which you can see on the Twitch catch-up or on your YouTube channel as well. See, I only got through about 15, 20 minutes of it, having played it through, and I think it was pretty tutorial-heavy. It is a game that feels like it started off on a PC or a console. Like, the length of the tutorial and the fact that I didn't even get to the bit where you have to start building your own tower within like 20 minutes of playing, which is a main core mechanic of the game, suggests that it feels like a game that's designed to be played on a console or a PC over a longer period of time. Whereas things built specifically for mobile usually get you up to speed within about 3 minutes, because that's all the opening window they have to catch your attention. So it does feel like a more long-term thing. One thing we'll say is that graphically it's very striking, and it's got a lot of different mechanics going on at once. So on the one hand, you've got a kind of Angry Birds thing where you're firing projectiles, trying to smash down the opponent's tower, which you can see going on right now. On the other hand, you can zoom in and suddenly you'll take control of your hero in a standard like 2D side-scrolling way. So you get a virtual joystick and you get some combat buttons as well. They suddenly pop up. So it's trying to do an awful lot. Presentation's great. I'm not 100% on the gameplay yet, but then I have only played the beginning of it. I think we reviewed it on the Vita. So you can see a review of it up on Pocket Gamer right now. The review hasn't gone live for this version yet, and we'll have to wait to see. You might end up doing this, Peter, seeing as it's free to play.
Mm-hmm.
That's generally how these things go. Mm-hmm. But you can download it right now. It's iPhone and or iPad compatible. And it's called Castle Storm Free to Siege, the full title. So you can check that out right now. Also out this week, Warhammer 40k Carnage. Let's talk smashy smashy. Harry, have you done smashy smashy in this game?
Yeah, I spent this afternoon playing this game.
Right on. Tell us all about it.
It is a video game.
Yes.
Ooh.
For the iPad and the iPhone.
And they're made by Apple?
They are made by Apple. Right. Yes. Okay. They are based in Cupertino in California, I believe.
Well, that sounds made up, but yeah.
Oh, well. Sorry. It's actually quite good. Not the Apple iPhone, but the game Warhammer 40,000 Carnage. it's not quite what I was expecting. There is that violence there that you'd expect from a game called Carnage, but it's a bit slower paced. You lose points from your overall score if you take damage.
Right.
So you sort of have to learn to block and jump away from stuff. And there's an awful lot of tinkering with your armor, mm-hmm. which I quite like. After you finished every level, you get a selection of stuff that you can buy. And if you don't buy it then, it'll be different stuff at the end of the next level. And you sort of tweak around and you get different pauldrons and chest plates and backpacks and guns and special guns, and it's got that World of Warcraft style rating system as well, so you know something special because it's got purple rating on it and you're like, oh, I've got to buy the purple one to get my gun. And it's a bit grindy, but the levels are short enough that it doesn't really bother you so much. It's sort of like a level will only take you 3 or 4 minutes maximum.
Right.
And then you can sort of go back to levels to earn more stars to open other levels, but they have new constraints on them, so the enemies might be tougher. There are some levels where it's just dark, like pitch black.
Right.
And sort of it gets lit up by your gunfire and stuff, but you sort of have to work through it, and there are like holes you can fall in and die. And then there's one bit with a big stumpy orc stomper. So it's quite good. I was surprised how much I actually got into it. Not so much the actual violence bit, but just the tweaking around the bits of my Space Marine is surprisingly enjoyable.
That's, funnily enough, almost exactly what Alex said, who reviewed it for AppSpy earlier today. That's the video that's playing on the stream right now. He said the same thing, where it's like the environments are like they're pretty, they're a bit samey, same thing with the combat, but it's the bit where you start upgrading everything that really helps you sort of invest in the character. Yeah. Where like you want to go, oh, I got the new thing and special chainsaw, and I'll have that, and then you want to get into the next fight so you can use it and swing it about. And I played it for about half an hour or so, and I sort of found the same thing, that tweaking the weaponry not only upgrades the power but also changes the appearance of the character, so you can see the progression as it goes along, visually reflected in your guy. And as he becomes more powerful, it gives you that, you know, that sense of I am a badass space marine, hackety hackety slash, and that's quite nice. So one thing we will say, it's quite expensive. For what it is, like, it's £4.99 or $6.99
for a video game.
That's quite, but it's quite expensive for a 2D side scroller thing. Like, you know, I would expect that for some kind of massive board game conversion or something like that. But it's quite dear.
Since we're live on Twitch at the moment, we do have a chat stream going on. One of the questions is that apparently there's a paywall at level 2-3 maybe.
Oh yes.
Is that true, Harry, from what you've...
I hit a place where I didn't have enough stars to continue. But like I say, at that point, you go back and you do the different parts of the levels that you haven't done before. And there's... because there are two branches as well. And sort of, I've done one branch and I went across. But I'm at level 10. This is... I'll show you.
Oh, very nice. Oh, show off.
I've got, like... Oh, I pressed the button. So, but that's what it looks like. But no, I haven't hit any paywalls. I'm level 10. I'm into Vert Hand.
Nice.
It's all utter, complete gibberish. It is spectacular nonsense.
What, the plot
it's
just, or the...
just all of it. All the words. You sort of, there's just one. There was like one explanation of the mission I was doing, and I'm a 40,000 geek. But like I read it and I thought, if I didn't know what these made up words mean, that would just be a sentence like saying flibble jibble doobble da from the seventh hooble of the cheese. But yeah.
Well, so you can get that right now. That's available. It's iPhone and iPad. It is expensive, £4.99, $6. We gave it a kind of a low 4 out of 5, so equivalent of about a 7 out of 10, I think. It's kind of good, if a bit pricey, but certainly if you're a big Warhammer fan, then this might... It's certainly better than that last Warhammer game, that rubbish tower defense one. Yeah. That was dull as dishwater. But this one is a little bit more lively than that. So you can check that out right now. Also out this week, Dextris, which I haven't played yet, which is a two-finger arcade game which involves you dodging a pair of blocks past a series of obstacles. It's a constantly vertically scrolling affair. As I understand it, you like press the right or left side of the screen and both squares will move towards that direction, so they'll drift left or right, like you can see in the video. But if you tap both sides of the screen simultaneously, the squares will split up from one another. Now, you've played this one as well, Ari, haven't you?
Yeah, I played it for a bit. I don't think I might be reviewing it, but I played it for a bit for a new story. And it's actually, there's nothing particularly deep about it. There's no sort of hidden depths. Mm-hmm. You're not going to suddenly discover that it's a story about two blocks that love each other and they keep getting torn apart by your nasty fingers.
I would play that game.
I'm making that game. Okay. As twitchy arcade blast sort of stuff goes, it's very good. It's polished, and I think it's free as well. Mm. Or that might be something else that was free. Something's free.
I think it is free, and there are no IAPs, so maybe ad-supported?
Yeah, it's ad-supported, yeah, because I played it on the New Zealand, in New Zealand. It's worth a try. It's free, so you've literally have nothing to lose.
And it actually looks quite nice. I quite like these simple things.
It's got the nice sparky stuff like this at the side of the screen.
Yeah, when it grinds against the walls and you get that stuff flicking off. It looks quite mesmeric, some of these games, I find. They're quite nice. So, yeah, might as well give it a try. Dextris, it's called, and that's free iPhone and iPad right now. What else have we got? Ah, now, we've been anticipating this one for a little while. Last Inua. This is a puzzle platform game in which you take control of not one, but two protagonists simultaneously. You've got a father and son duo, and you have to traverse this very icy, wintry environment, clambering over it using each of your character's unique skills. So the father is obviously bigger and bulkier, and he can do sort of bruisery type stuff, like he can bat through obstacles. Occasionally ice blocks will appear and he has to wander up to it and just bosh it with his fist, and that clears the way for his boy who couldn't get past. However, the boy is touched by the magics, and this allows him to float around between these kind of hovering little glowing plasma ball bolts, again like you can see in the video. So he can sort of teleport and transport through areas that lets him get to places where his dad can't go, and then he can do a few things and maybe open up the way for his father to crawl through later. So you're constantly switching between these two characters to just make it to the end of the level and survive. The art style I compared it to yesterday was a Year Walk from Simogo. It looks slightly papercrafty in that way. It's got the same layered textures, that parallax scrolling effect, where you've got some trees in the foreground and in the background, and everything's in that white and blue and grey, and it looks a little bit kind of haunting and paint splattery. It looks really nice, basically. I love the look of it. And it's methodical. I think that's the best way to describe it. Have either of you played this one yet?
No, I've been watching you play it, and when we were sort of streaming it, the one thing I kept coming back to was Lost Vikings.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, it's a very slow-paced game. You are not... Even the running, it doesn't happen that fast. It's very much about atmosphere, which I like in games. It's trying to be all creepy and haunting, and the first beginning of the game, it's just you, the father, trying to find the son, who's kind of unconscious in this cave. And obviously trying to build up this idea of there being a relationship between the two of them, and that's really nice. Don't go into it expecting runny, chargy combat. It's basically the opposite of Warhammer 40k Carnage. So, if you are charging along in that game, battering and smashing, and, you know, it's very action-orientated and short bursts of blood, this is not that. You have to think, and you have to get him to go up there to do a thing, to unlock the key, and knock down the wall that will then allow the other boy to get through, and he goes under because he's small, and, you know, all that stuff. I'm playing through The Last of Us towards the end of it at the moment, and all the stuff where Ellie has to go and sneak through to do things because she's a little girl, and the big guy can't fit. All that sort of stuff. It's based around that idea. I'm looking forward to playing more of it. It was kind of slowish, and I don't know quite what I was expecting from it, but I'm going to reserve judgment on it at this point. I haven't played it enough to give a proper opinion. It is out right now, again, iPhone and iPad. It's £2.49 or $3.99, and our review will be up very, very soon, both on AppSpy, which is going to go live tomorrow, I think, and on Pocket Gamer as well. Finally, from the decidedly lo-fi end of the spectrum, 2-Bit Cowboy from Crescent Moon, who just keep knocking the games out at a ridiculous rate. They rival Ravenous Games in terms of their output. And Chillingo, possibly. It keeps coming. It's a Game Boy game, sort of. Like, basically. Well, it is. Look at it.
Move on.
Yeah.
Move on.
I'm sorry. You can see it playing in the window. And if you can't, it looks exact. It's a Game Boy game. It's got that green tint to it where it's monochromatic, but just green and a slightly lighter green. And it's a 2D platformer, and you're a cowboy. You're shooting things. You jump on a horse. You jump over things. And you just fall in some water and you swim about, and then you climb up a wall and you shoot. It's a retro platformer made to look like a Game Boy game, which is fine.
Yeah.
Like, I played it for about 10 minutes. It sort of is what it is. I'm that impressed, I'll be honest. Maybe I'm just sick of retro platformers at this point.
Live in the now.
I know, right? You haven't played this one, have you, Peter? Harry, did you give it a go?
No, I wrote the news pieces about it just because it looked quite nice. But they didn't get a chance. I know that very much the proof of the pudding in any iOS platform games is the controls.
Yeah.
So how are the controls?
I found them a little bit fiddly. Now, I can see, looking at this video, is captured from an iPhone, clearly. So the buttons are scaled to fit the iPhone. It looks like on the iPad, which is where I was playing it on, the buttons are the same size relatively as they were on the iPhone. So they're teeny tiny buttons in the corner of the screen. And it didn't control very well. I thought it was actually quite awkward. I don't know whether you can scale the controls up. That might be a thing. But no, I didn't find it particularly easy or natural to play. It felt a bit stiff and nasty, and I kept missing the buttons. It is what it is. I say it again, but it's Game Boy platformer, isn't it? If you're really into that sort of thing, then this is definitely for you.
Are you just not feeling a retro platformer at the moment? Because I know a whole bunch of people who would go, brilliant, I'm well up for that.
Yeah, but I don't know if it's just this particular one, but no, I mean, I like it when they put a new spin on it, but this doesn't appear to be putting a new spin on it. This is just straight up emulating the look of the Game Boy, the controls of the Game Boy, just a BA left and right, that's it. And I say, that's fine if you're into that sort of thing. I'm not saying it's a nasty game or anything, but I can't pretend to be supremely excited about it.
Meh.
But either way, you can get it right now, 69p or 99 cents, and it is called 2-Bit Cowboy.
Come sit upon my throne of games.
So yes, it's that time once again, the three of us gathered in the chamber wherein lies the throne of games, and we're all going to sit on it, but not at the same time, because that would be weird, and Nintendo would say we're trying to have a political stance of some kind. And we wouldn't want that now, would we? So, who's going to start out this week? I reckon Harry, the Harry Slater, should probably kick things off today. So, Harry, what have you been playing this week?
Firstly, I don't know, that's a terrible nickname. That's just awful.
I just grabbed it out of the air. I don't know where I got the inspiration from.
Okay. It's deep. This week, I have been playing a video game that goes by the name of Republique.
I wondered how you were going to pronounce it.
Republic.
You're going to go for the affected French. Republique.
It's the Republique and everybody talks like this. No, only one person talks like that, and it's Jennifer Hale, who is Femme Shep, but it's really confusing.
And it's like, not great. Not her best work. I love her, but not her best work.
Yeah. I was playing the second episode, which I believe is called Metamorphosis.
Mm-hmm.
And picks up where the first episode left off, in a holding cell, and then some story occurs and you have to sneak around a library,
okay,
which looks quite nice, but is quite small, and you're doing lots and lots and lots and lots of backtracking. And they seem to have taken away the kind of, thing on the heads-up display that shows you where you have to go, so you have to bring up the map to see, and the map's not that great. And I don't know, I gave it a 6 out of 10, which I think is a lot of other places seem to think that it was better than the first episode,
right?
But because Mark was supposed to review it, but he had wrist problems.
Okay.
No
sniggering at the back.
Stop it. So I had to, but I hadn't played the first episode, I played the first episode and then pretty much mainlined it and went straight into the second episode from it. So I think there didn't seem to be any difference whatsoever. It didn't seem to have changed particularly. I think it's got new guards in it that follow random patrol routes.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you go through a room and there's nobody in there and you just walk through it, like and then sometimes there's like a guy and he tases you,
right.
And it's sad. But I don't know. I think a lot of people have been saying that it has a good story, and I think that's a lie. It's just, it doesn't have a...
It's an amalgamation, isn't it? I mean, I played through this initially when it first came out, the first episode, and it's doing this 1984 Orwellian oppressive, like, high security riff, isn't it?
Got like bits of BioShock, and it does sort of some Kojima-esque stuff that really does like just having soliloquies in the middle of your game. And it just, it doesn't gel together. I don't really care about any of the characters. I don't mind when she gets electrocuted, you know, because I'm telling her to go hide in a bush, and she's not hiding in a bush. So electrocute her, that's fine. None of it, it doesn't seem to have an identity of its own. Like you say, it seems to be this cobbled together selection of like GCSE level politics essays, and they, you know, you've read Huxley and you've read Orwell and you've put it all in a pot, and then you've made a game out of it that's got bits of stealth games in it but not as good as the other stealth games. And being the sort of detached observer and swooshing around the different cameras, and there is an interesting game somewhere in there. There's sort of the seeds of it, and sometimes you're like, oh, it's getting, and then it just does something annoying, and I am not a large fan of it. I'm intrigued to see what happens, but if it stays where it is, then where it's going isn't particularly interesting. Right.
It looks to me that in terms of its aesthetic, in terms of its story, in terms of its sort of messaging, it looks like somebody listened to a Linkin Park album and then made a game based on it.
You think it's an emo stealth-em-up? Well, new metal, let's say. That's not emo, it's new metal.
All it needs is Fred Durst as an unlockable character. Oh my God. Fred Durst is an unlockable character.
The name that should never be spoken aloud. The worst frontman in Fred new metal history.
Durst.
Ah, lame. Well, yeah, I played this, and I agree with you to some degree, where when I first booted it up and I started switching between cameras, I'm like, oh, this is quite a nice idea, I like this, you know, swishy-swishy. Control stuff, little bit iffy. And you're right, you do have instances where you're like, sneak, hide behind the thing, woman! And she won't, and it's like, oh, this is really frustrating, and you feel like there's a lack of agency on your part, you can't control her quite the way you'd want to.
I think the other thing is, as well, my other problem with it, while we're here...
Go on, then, get off your chest.
The world is just empty. It's like, it's supposed to be this underground community of... And all you ever see is Hope and, like, one or two guards. And then occasionally you'll go into a room and that will trigger some other main character sort of walking in. Mm-hmm. But you never see anyone else. Because you're supposed to be part of an academy or something, and there's never any other students milling about. There's never even any sign that there is anything, any other people in this world. And it just sort of feels like a bit silly. It's like it's trying to create this universe for you, but it only has three actors and they have to keep running off and changing their jumpers.
And one of them has a right dodgy French accent. Even though I love her. Sorry, Jennifer, but...
Yeah.
Okay, well, second episode's out now. It was... The launch of this was a complete nightmare. We covered it last week. But you can get them both...
Maybe that's why I'm so angry about it.
Yeah, you can pick them both up right now. I think the first chapter went free for a while as well in order to get it or whatever. But yeah, some interesting ideas, but we reserve judgment. We just put our review of the first two chapters up on AppSpy, so you can watch the Alex's opinion and obviously check out Harry's written review in more detail on Pocket Gamer. Alright, thank you, Harry. I am going to talk about tanks and stuff. Mm-hmm. Specifically, World of Tanks Blitz. Mm-hmm. Now, I am not a tankist in real life. Mm-hmm. I do not tank. It is not the thing that I do.
Sorry. What was that word again?
Which one? I'm a tankist, you know.
Oh, tank. Sorry.
Yeah, right.
Tanker.
I thought it was tanker.
I'm not one tanks to tank. We tank, you tank.
Right, sorry, yes.
I think that's how it's done, isn't it? Anyway, it got soft launch in a bunch of countries, specifically Nordic countries. I think it's Sweden and Denmark and places like that. About five Swedish countries. Again, we can put the link for the story, and you can check out the YouTube video that's up on AppSpy. It's got the regions in there. It is a mobile version of the extremely popular PC MMO. So it's a massively multiplayer online game in which everyone gets online, gets a tank, signs himself up to a platoon, and then two platoons go head-to-head, at least in the mobile version, against one another to capture the flag. And they do that by blowing the crap out of the other team. Now, this version is online only, obviously, being an MMO, which means don't look for a single-player campaign. You will not find it. So it means you either need to be connected to Wi-Fi or be prepared to put up with extensive 3G bills if you want to play it. So bear that in mind. It is quite good fun, actually, though I was a little bit hesitant at first. The hurdle I have to get over, and the reason I've never been drawn to tank battles in games, is because for me it feels quite slow and sluggish. I've always had that reaction issue where, you know, they're trundling along and you have to turn around and it takes a fortnight for the thing to do a 90 degree turn and then you trundle off again, during which time you get hit. I mean, that personally has never appealed to me. And also the fact that it's more war games, like tanky World War II era war games, and I don't like those in general because I find the whole thing a bit weird and a bit slightly distasteful personally. I'm just not into that sort of era. Saying that, we played it for about like 3 or 4 matches, about 20 minutes, and tried to record it. We got kicked out of matches by the ping, low ping or high ping, whichever way around it is. So we had some issues recording it. We eventually did get a couple of games up there onto our YouTube channel, and we died in both of them quite quickly and were rubbish. However, we then played it on Twitch later that afternoon, and I totally kicked ass. And that was really quite good fun. So it obviously takes a little getting used to. And the controls, you control it by using the left thumb to control the movement of the tank, including forwards, backwards, rotating left and right. And then the right thumb is moving the camera around, pressing the binoculars to zoom in, and also activating the fire buttons as well. And it controls fine, but you got to get used to it. Once you get the hang of the fact that it is slow and sluggish, my initial feeling is like, oh, this feels all like you're trying to drive through treacle and it feels really gluey. But it's just because it's a tank and it's kind of supposed to be like that. And if it suddenly sprinted off at 90 miles an hour, it would be a bit weird. So it's more getting used to the fact that you're dealing with slow-moving vehicles, and that's kind of how they control. And once you bear that in mind, it does actually control fine. And I was able to sneak in there behind a building, poke my little turret out, and then take a few pot shots at people, and then I killed a couple of men, and it was quite fun. And then we won the game, and that was quite fun. Mm. And then there's a great big upgrade tree. Like, it's massive upgrade trees for all the different tanks you can get, loads of them. And then each tank you get, you can modify to the gills with different cannons and tracks and turrets and engines and just everything. In order to power up your tanks, you have to earn experience, and experience is earned by obviously playing and winning games. However, the experience only applies to the tank you're in. So if you want to level up a tank and earn experience, you have to play as that tank, then go, collect experience for it, and then level up. If you switch to a different tank and you want to use the experience you've gathered in other games, you can't. You only get the experience that you've played for with that tank. If you want to buy free experience, like experience points that you can use anywhere, you have to pay stuff, because this is a free-to-play game. So be warned, bear in mind, that you're going to have to cough up for stuff if you want to upgrade really, really fast. Saying that, it doesn't have any wait timers in it. You mm-hmm. can get into games as often as you like. You can play for as long as you like. And there are no ads. Yeah. So that's quite good for a free-to-play game.
It's pretty cool, right? And like, this is why we're going to be playing it a lot more often. We're going to build an app spy army.
We're going to try and do it, yeah, because we did it on Twitch and it was actually quite good fun. And I know the game is quite big, but it's only out in a few territories right now. So for the full list, check back. But we're talking Nordic stuff, so it's Sweden and maybe Switzerland and Denmark and those kind of countries.
I don't think Switzerland is a Nordic country.
I was saying S countries. Okay. It's probably Spain and Scandinavia.
Scandinavian. It's all five. It's
that's all
Norway,
of them.
Denmark,
that's my
Sweden, Finland, and that's it. And maybe that's Iceland it, as well, I think it's out.
It's probably there too. Mm. Björk's playing it as we speak.
Yeah.
She's good. Right. Is, and so what we'll do is we'll play it a bit more. When it goes global, which should hopefully be in around about 3 weeks to a month, I'd estimate, we'll bring it to your attention again. And if you're game, anyone watching, get involved, sign up, and we'll get platoons together and we'll do massive battles and try and kick the arse out of other people. Because it'd be larks. That'd be fun. And yeah, I quite enjoyed it. We'll play more, and it's gonna, well, I'll have to see if we do hit an upgrade wall and it suddenly, the free-to-playness suddenly becomes a bit more sinister. But at the moment, it's, for a free-to-play game, pretty generous and pretty reasonable, I think. Leaving us with Peter. Peter, what have you been playing?
Hi, I've been playing a game called Nintendo Pocket Football Club for the Nintendo 3DS.
Wow, I just fell asleep.
I know. I did too, nearly, while playing it.
Oh.
But that wouldn't have really mattered, if I'm perfectly honest with you. So it is a football management simulation game, the kind that people that like spreadsheets with colours like to like. It's... now, caveat, I'm not huge into football. I know who Eric Cantona is. I know who David Beckham is, because I know who his lovely wife is. She was a Spice Girl. I know bits and pieces like that, but I'm not into football particularly. And but I decided that this looked cool. And you know what? If you're looking at the video right now in the stream, then you will also go, oh, that does look cool. Because it does look cool, right? It's like a 2D, 8-bit, flat visual style for the characters, and then a 3D pitch. And it looks very... The characters really pop out when you've got the 3D on. There's a great deal of depth to everything, even though everything's 2D, and everything just looks charming. It looks like a Kunio Kun title, and that is a very good thing indeed. And if you don't know what that reference is, then it looks a little bit like Sensible Soccer. It's kind of got that tone as well to it.
Yeah, a little bit.
Like friendly and happy and jolly and lovely and customizable and all that sort of thing. So you've got a team, it's completely unlicensed, so it's your team, and you give it a flag to wave and a strip to wear, and you ask them to go and do goals. And
yes.
And then they go and try to do goals. And when they're trying to do these goals, you'll get these training cards that will pop up, because your little avatar, manager avatar, will pop up and go, oh, the dribbling doesn't look very good, better do some more dribbling practice. And then it will come up with a little card and it'll say dribbling practice, and you'll have to go and do some of that. And you can select to do that, and you can train them when you're not during, you know, when you're not in the middle of matches. But during the game itself, there's very little that you can actually do.
You're not controlling the characters directly. Football manager, so you're watching it play out, right?
Yes, absolutely. It's a typical football management game. And the thing that you end up doing is watching for people's fatigue levels. You just make sure that everyone's not pooped out, essentially. Because if they are, and they get involved in a particularly hefty tackle, then they might get knocked over.
Can you give them, like, an orange or something? That's what you do to...
Put them up in it. And you go, have that.
Magic spray.
Oh, yeah, the magic spray. That's true. If they fall over and start doing a little cry.
Absolutely. But you can't really do anything. And so today, for example, we were sort of joking about it before the stream began, but I'll let you into the joke, dear viewer / listener, at one point I pressed play on the game and I needed to go out and do something, which was buying a bun. And... And so I just thought, as a bit of an experiment, I just thought, you know what? I'm just going to leave it playing and see what happens. I walked out, went out for 20 minutes to go and get myself a bun, came back and I'd won. And that wasn't because I'd had any sort of influence or anything like that inside the game itself. It was just because I'd kind of grinded for a long enough time to train a whole bunch of my characters. I keep nearly referring to them as heroes. to train them up, and they're better. They're just better players, and if you have better players than the other team, then you win. And to me, that isn't really very exciting.
Don't you have equally, that in Clash of Clans and stuff, though?
Describing a football management game, though, I mean, that is basically that is what they are.
So, absolutely. So that's kind of like my criticism of it from somebody who wants a kind of a management game that's not necessarily about football. Like, it doesn't matter whether or not it's about football, you know. Like, I'm not particularly interested in shooting guns, but I don't mind playing games about shooting lasers, right? Like a laser gun game or whatever. And I don't mind playing a management game that's about football. It's just got to be exciting. It's got to be inherently exciting. So it's not very good for those people. And for the people who want a football management game, it's not really deep enough in terms of actual strategic depth and nuance within the actual gameplay itself. And outside of a match, there's not enough there to feel authentic. So the football fans won't like it either. A perfect example, perfect final example of why it's a little bit strange is that you're told at one point that if you continue losing matches, your fans will stop supporting the club.
Right.
And even as somebody who's not interested in football, I know that that's not how fans react unless they're... And I make this joke when it goes live. Hold on. Ready for this?
I'm bracing for
unless you're a Manchester United fan, Because I gather that Manchester United fans are they're basically just quite flimsy and like wishy washy and whimsical. Like I don't know. I get glory hoggers. I heard that somebody told me they were glory hoggers. Anyway, they wear red.
Yes.
And yeah. So it doesn't ring true. It doesn't ring authentic. So it doesn't really appeal to football fans. It doesn't really appeal to people who kind of like just want a management game. Mm-hmm. It's just this strange blend of totally okay but not really brilliant footy game, but it does look nice.
Is this out now, or are you mid review for a release later on?
So this is out now, and the review will be out in the next couple of days.
Okay, all right, fair enough. I could see this appearing on an iPad, but then I suppose on the iPad it wouldn't cost like £30, would it?
It sounds a bit.
It's an eShop downloadable, to be fair.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay, so it's one of the cheaper ones. Yes.
Yes, it is. I mean, for you know, eShop games tend to be a premium because they're a handheld experience.
Sure,
But yes, I completely agree with you. I would see this on a, you know.
It sounds a bit Kairosofty.
It's a bit Kairosofty, but you know how Kairosoft has that really enjoyable loop?
Mm.
That satisfactory loop of just like you can see things are working and you can see how a change that you make here is changing another statistic like over here. Mm-hmm. This doesn't really have that.
Right. Mm.
So there's no direct correlation. Like you spend ages trying to figure out how all of these training cards work and getting the most out of them. And even then, you never quite understand. And I've plowed hours into this thing. And you just get to the point where you just like turn the game on, play it, and walk away. And I don't think that makes for a particularly exciting game.
I can understand that take on it. Fair enough. All right then. So the full title of the game, once again, for people listening,
is Nintendo Pocket Football Club. Yes, Nintendo.
It does
Pocket
sound
Football
like
Club.
A random assortment of football-y words, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Nintendo Football Club in the pocket balls.
Nintendo Pocket. Yeah, definitely NPFC.
Yeah, awesome. NPFC. All right then. So you can get that right now from the eShop if you desire. But that'll wrap it up for today. Thanks for sticking with us, guys. Everyone in the stream, thanks for listening to us and listeners out there in podcast land as well. We're going to be back next week as always. Slightly different lineup, I think. We'll keep it a surprise as to who it's going to be. But in the meantime, thanks for listening. Thanks for joining us. And come back and join us for more Pocket Gamer podcast stuff. Bye-bye.
Bye.